presumably the convent as well had quite a lot of Spanish staff. Your father had a lot of Spanish staff. Presumably.
He had about four or five Spanish staff there, besides the British staff. We had a colour sergeant in the Royal Marines, Colour Sergeant Wheeler, whose wife was very gifted. She used to do the Princess Royal's hair for her when she came out. She was particularly pleased about that, I know. And we thought at one time we might lose Mrs. Wheeler because of this. But obviously my father had his own batman who was there. And the cook was British as well, an Army Catering Corps chap, who was very good. But we had a number of excellent Spanish staff who were recruited on a short-term basis.
Can you remember, talking about the cook, what you used to eat? Did you eat English food and Spanish food?
I preferred Spanish food. I know they cooked the most excellent paella, which we used to have, and we always had very good tortillas to go on picnics with. And so the majority of our own food probably was Spanish food, but when entertaining, people did expect British food, and British food was served for them, so they weren't disappointed.
It's so interesting, isn't it, that? Because it really is of the time, if you think now. I mean, would you sit down and have sort of roast beef and, you know,
I agree.
Hot, you know?
Yes, yes.
And that must have been what it was. Do you think it was for officials?
That sort of thing, yes.
Proper. And what about wine? Do you think it was always Spanish wine?
Well, we had an amount of Spanish wine. Spanish wine rarely in the 50s, late 50s, had not rarely been tried in this country very much, so nobody knew a great deal about it. We used to have a certain amount, and of course Spanish sherry, which was absolutely delicious, and which was unfortified and was a lovely drink, but a certain amount of port, although I always felt one would be very unwise to drink port in that climate, but some people did. But yes, I think that the majority of wine probably was still French, and came to us through Scania and Speed, who bought it from the south of France. They shipped it straight in.
That's true, because actually Spanish wine in the sort of early 60s was absolutely disgusting anyway, I think. Well, some that came, you know, stuff that came into England,
yes.
I can vaguely remember that. So let's talk a little bit about, because we kind of touched on entertaining, about distinguished guests, because there were a few distinguished guests.
Well, it was great fun in Gibraltar, because having a delightful climate, by and large, except, of course, when the Levanter was blowing, but that was only a short-term inconvenience, bringing that damp wind from the east. Apart from that, it was a delightful climate, and we were lucky enough to have a number of people coming out who I think were avoiding the British climate to do so. The Princess Royal, that's the late Princess Royal, Princess Mary, used to come out quite often. She used to have an annual visit because she had got to know us in Germany when my father was there, when she'd been visiting her regiments. And she used to spend about a fortnight with us, which was great fun, and she brought a lot of news of what was going on in England. From parts of society that one normally wouldn't have heard stories, and was always absolutely charming. She also very kindly came and visited me when I was in Millbank Hospital, which was extremely kind, and told me what was going on in Gibraltar, and shook the nursing staff rigid, I think, poor things. But
did she come with an entourage always?
She brought a lady in waiting, yes, and that was it. No one else. Of course, Gibraltar was very sophisticated. When you're thinking about colonial spots, the police force there was absolutely first class. Indeed, I mean, it was formed in 1830. I think when the London police force was formed, and so it was on a par with it, and equipped in the same way. They had policemen's helmets and blue uniforms and whistles and all the right sort of things, and it was with confidence that one could leave the security of a royal guest to them, without them being too obtrusive or annoying in the whole business. Indeed, the chief of police, when he arrived, he had been a colonial policeman elsewhere, and he arrived in Gibraltar. I remember him saying it was more like taking on a bit of the Metropolitan Police than coming to a colonial possession at all. So it was quite a different feel to it.
Who can you remember who was the chief of police?
I forget his
name.
Wasn't
Gowing? Was it Gowing? No, you've been fantastic about names. All sorts of names, which I'm sure people pick up on. Oh, that's very interesting.
And
did the Gibraltarians, were they interested in Princess Mary?
Very, yes. Mm. They were delighted that she came. And invited her to open a certain number of things and to any large events that were going on while she was there. She used to just drop in for a few moments. They were always extremely pleased to see her. It was good from our point of view. We were delighted that she came because it did raise the profile of Gibraltar, there's no doubt, in the eyes of the British people in England. And reminded them that Gibraltar was still there, was an important place, and was a place that was regarded.
I mean, that's a very interesting thing to say, actually, because what do you think? Obviously looking back, and they must have been chatting about this at the time, that the sort of profile of Gibraltar was to English people then after. I mean, obviously the war had brought it to prominence, so people knew where it was at least.
Yes. It remained, of course, as firm as the Rock of Gibraltar in the language, and people all knew about it. I think that they viewed it as a rather curious sort of appendage. The Foreign Office viewed it as an absolute menace because of the relations with Spain. Of course, sections of the British public knew it extremely well. We were still in the time of national service, and ships used to always call there. It was their first port of call out of England, and their crews used to pour into Gibraltar and a source of enormous income to some people, an enormous annoyance to others. But a great many British tars must have got to know Gibraltar, and that, of course, filtered back into Great Britain. I think that for anyone who served there, there was absolutely no doubt about its importance in the Cold War. There is the bastion of the Western Mediterranean. But I think that otherwise, people felt that it might be a useful place to drop in on if they were holidaying in Spain, but it was not the profile of it as a holiday resort was not at all high, and that was something that concerned my father a very great deal. It was one of the things that during his governorship he rarely wished to improve. He set in train a number of things. He encouraged Sir George and Lady Gajero, who owned the Rock Hotel, to see what they could do about expanding and helping with and advising on what hospitality measures could be made within Gibraltar. He had the Keatley Way cut through the Rock, which allowed the people going from Rosie Bay and Almeida Gardens to continue on in a road that he had cut through the rock by the Fortress Engineer Regiment and which linked up with the Europa Point Road. So people could go straight through, and it opened up Europa Point, which had been up until then an entirely military area with a range and things like that alongside the barracks for building hotels. That was his aim in doing that. And he also encouraged the government to help with grants towards extending the runway so that larger aircraft could land and we would not be so dependent on people coming in from Spain using the Spanish aircraft airports. This was where he saw us going, because at that stage the services had retreated from east of Suez and had given up by and large the basis there. It was quite clear to him that the naval dockyard would close, and indeed Admiral Foster Brown, who was the Royal Naval Admiral there at the time, said that it had only to be a matter of time before the Navy would no longer use that dockyard. They would rely on others, mainly from UK-based. So he realised that Gibraltar was going to have to turn into another direction. And tourism, with the mass of cheap flights, which were just in the early 60s, obviously in sight, and also one forgets we had currency restrictions in this country at that time, preventing people from taking currency away in the early 50s, and these were now being relaxed. So tourism was expanding like anything, and he reckoned that Gibraltar would be just the place for people, if they didn't spend their whole holidays there, certainly to start their holiday. I hope that I set an example by spending the first and the last part of my honeymoon there on my way over to Tangier.
Well, that's really interesting, because it meant, didn't it, that you could then go round Keighley Way, then made it possible to go to drive around the whole island. Well, not an island, I always want to call it an island, but
the peninsula, the rock,
which is actually really important.
That's
to
true,
be able
yes,
to do
that was the spin-off from that, yes.
Right, okay. Now, that is interesting. And do you think he did succeed? Because, obviously, you know, it became... I mean, it's gone down now, I think, but I think it was quite
the tourists
a holiday, certainly a tourist
came.
Thing in
no,
the 60s
that, that is
and
true. At the time when the Germans were singing about a Paloma Blanca, we certainly found that the tourists did pour out, and I think they enjoyed it. I think they loved it, coming through Gibraltar. And I've met lots of people who have got warm feelings about their first deep breaths of warm, scented Mediterranean air once they had cleared the airport at Gibraltar. They say it was absolutely marvellous.
There is always that, isn't it? Getting off a plane. I love that. Totally, absolutely. There's also, you did mention, what have I got scribbled down here? So we talked about the Princess Royal Montgomery.
Yes, Field Marshal Montgomery was an old friend of my father's anyway. They'd served together in Italy and later, and when Monty was CIGS, my father was holding down a couple of important points in the posts in the War Office. And Monty had visited us often in Germany, and once in the Far East. He wasn't a great Far Eastern soldier, and he came out and visited us a couple of times in Gibraltar. A man of enormous charm and tremendously active. He was brilliant with the young, and he would address a group of young boys and young girls, and they would be absolutely on the tips of their toes to listen to him, because he had the most magnetic personality. I know he was very controversial in his way of command, but I was never under him to be commanded by him, so I never met that side. But to me, he was always a magnetic and mesmeric man, a most interesting chap as well, who I thought was super. And he used to come out and visit and relax and walk around and see his old service friends there, and then go on. His last visit was after coming back from the British War Cemetery at Alamein, so he had many memories there which were most interesting to hear what he had to talk about.
How absolutely fascinating to have had that
man.
Experience.
I think, though, that the most impressive experience for me probably was when Onassis brought his yacht into our harbour, and he came to stay in the convent. And he collected Winston Churchill, who arrived by air. And I think meeting Winston Churchill was probably one of the most impressive moments in my life. A man who had completely saved Britain and was so such a personality. And even then, in old age, he had a distinct twinkle and knew exactly what was going on. When he greeted you and chatted to you.
So did he come and stay in the convent, Winston Churchill?
He didn't stay, no. He landed, he came and had lunch with us, and then he went straight down onto the Christina, onto Onassis's lovely yacht.
So Onassis had the most extraordinary address book then, didn't he?
Before? Oh, he was an amazing man. A man of huge charm. And he had divorced Christina in between his first visit to us and his second. My mother was saying that she was in two minds as to whether to shake him by the hand or not. He entered the convent, threw his arms wide and said, "Lady Keighley, the last time we met, we were talking of mountains." She then knew why people married him.
He's just extraordinary, charming. How fantastic.
Amazing man. But now, it was a very interesting time to see these people visit. There was a worrying time when we felt that we might have a visit from people who were not quite so welcome, because at this time the French-Algerian war had been going on for some time and was really just coming to an end, and de Gaulle had made his famous expression that Algeria was not France, and the French generals in Algeria tried to hold a coup in 1961, a year before my father gave up, and they were quite clearly going to come back to Paris and try and take over the government from de Gaulle. And we got a message from the Foreign Office that were they to pass through Gibraltar on their way, we should detain them. Now, these were men who we had met everywhere. General Salin, we had met in the Far East. He had stayed with us in Singapore. And he was delightful. He and Madame Salin were delightful people. And they were friends. And General Charles had been one of the generals during the Suez operation, and my father got to know him well. And again, he was a friend. And so he told the Foreign Office that unless he was given a specific arrest warrant, which diplomatically I think would have been impossible because it was purely a French domestic matter, this, he would really do not see his way to being able to detain these officers, who, so far as the British were concerned, had not actually committed any crime worth being arrested. So luckily, I may say, they did not actually come through. They showed the tact to go direct to France, which was great relief all round, really.
Yeah, that's very interesting, actually, because we talk a lot about Gibraltar's relationship with Spain, but what about Gibraltar's relationship with Morocco? I mean, from a sort of historical, diplomatic point of view, but and as well as a personal.
Yes, of course, Morocco, or Tangier in particular, had been very closely related to the British Crown before. I mean, in the 1660s, had actually been British, and my regiment actually was raised to defend it. But it had become an international zone, and then the King of Morocco had taken it over in 1956. It had been, when it was an international zone, jointly administered by the British and a number of other foreign powers, the Spaniards amongst them. And so we maintained some very close relations there with people in Tangier. The Gibraltarians used to go over there a lot. They had the Montscalpe steamship, which used to plough over, which featured so well in Alec Guinness's The Captain's Paradise film, which came out, Good Evening Studios production. And we found that people used to spend a weekend in Morocco or go down to Fez or to Rabat or up to the Atlas Mountains for a break from the climate in Gibraltar at various times of year, and they enjoyed it enormously. And I think our relationship with them was good. It was a relaxed atmosphere. It still had the sensible approach to people being able to buy a drink there, which is not, in fact, against the Quran. It's just that you're not allowed to have excessive wine. So the King of Morocco was quite happy to allow licenses for people to sell drink there, and which meant that the various hotels over there were profitable. And indeed, Sir George Gajero owned a hotel there, the Riff, which is a very fine hotel, and I understand a number of other Gibraltar families own property over there as well. So yes, I think it was pretty close, really. I don't think that we ever went to the Spanish possession of Ceuta at all. I think that was purely a Spanish holiday resort over in North Africa.
Yes, and were there many Moroccans in Gibraltar in those days?
Not in those days, really, no. I think that all the labour force was entirely brought in from Spain in the various jobs that was there. And indeed, I don't think the Moroccans wished to come and work in southern Europe at that stage. They seemed particularly happy, and it was quite prosperous in Morocco, that part of Morocco, and Tangier as well, particularly.